I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is March 9th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. The clerk will take attendance by roll.
Chair Hansen is present. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, present.
Wasilewicz, present. Heitzman, Josh.
Present.
Acomb, Patty.
Present.
Applin, Susan.
Present.
Thacker, Jeff.
Present.
Thackerfin, Jamie.
Present.
Eklund, Rob.
Present.
Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, present.
Green, Steve.
Present.
Igo, Spencer.
Present.
Jordan, Sydney.
Present.
Keeler, Heather.
Present.
Lee, Fu.
Lee, present.
Lippert, Todd.
Present.
Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, present.
Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, present.
Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, present.
Tice, Gamma.
Gamma, present.
Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. The next item on the agenda are the minutes for Friday, March 5th, 2021. Representative Jordan, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I believe our meeting started at 8:30, not 8 a.m., but that would be... Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, we can hear you.
Yep.
My only edit would be that our meeting started at 8:30, not 8 a.m., and with that edit, I would move the minutes.
Representative Jordan moved the minutes with a slight correction on the time from 8 to 8:30. Is there any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. The motion is adopted. Members, the first item on the agenda today is House File 1727, Representative Eklund, Farm Survey Requirements. We have allotted about a half an hour till 1:30 for this. Representative Eklund, will you move that House File 1727 be recommended to be re-referred to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund, I believe you have an author's amendment. Would you like to explain the amendment briefly?
I do have the Mr. Chair, H1727A1 author's amendment. A few changes in this amendment on 1.6. The owner must immediately notify the Commissioner of Natural Resources of escape survey. 1.17D, a hunter licensed by the Commissioner of Natural Resources under Chapter 97A may kill and possess escape farm survey in a lawful manner and is not liable to the owner for the loss of the animal. Continuing on 1.2, escape farm survey killed by a hunter or destroyed by the Commissioner of Natural Resources must be tested for chronic wasting disease at the owner's expense. Line 2.5 through 2.8, the identification of white-tailed deer must also include the contact information of a phone number or address that enables the reader to readily identify the owner of the escaped deer. This contact information does not need to be visible at a distance of 50 yards. Mr. Chair, I believe that should take care of the fiscal note that was generated earlier on the tagging issue. Line 2.24, survey carcasses procured by any means into Minnesota is prohibited unless they're cut and wrapped. And line 2.28, survey carcasses originating from outside Minnesota may be transferred on a direct route through the state by non-residents. And Mr. Chair, that's the extent of the changes by the A1 amendment.
Representative Eklund, are you sure it's the A1 and not the A2?
Well, that's what I have printed out, Mr. Chair. Maybe I got it wrong, but I printed this out getting ready for committee last week, so I didn't check at the new amendment order a number this morning.
Mr. Strohmeyer.
Mr. Chair, it's the A2 amendment. It's incorporated the adopt the dumpster that was added to the amendment.
Okay. Oh, I apologize, Mr. Chair. I forgot about that. The dumpster provision that was added in.
Representative Eklund moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. Let me just check here. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Eklund, to your bill as amended. Representative Eklund, you're muted.
I swore, Mr. Chair, today I would not do this, and I've done it twice already. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1727, as amended, is a bill that makes changes in how the state of Minnesota interacts with the farm survey industry on behalf of the citizens of Minnesota. It is designed to limit and control interaction between farm survey and the wild free-roaming herd. There are currently 4,397 farmed whitetail cervidae in the state of Minnesota on 177 farms. The total numbers of farmed cervidae, all species included in the state, is 8,307 animals on a total of 264 farms. These numbers were provided by the Board of Animal Health. The farmed whitetail is unique since it is the only farm animal operation in the state that has the same genetic animal in the wild that is managed by the state DNR. The committee has seen many parts of this bill in the past, and the major change or new language is in Section 5 of the bill, lines 3.13 to lines 3.18, which transfers administration of the enforcement of farm survey from the Board of Animal Health to the Commissioner of the DNR, Department of Natural Resources. The other major changes found in the amendment, as I mentioned earlier, should satisfy the fiscal note issue with tagging. The farm whitetail survey must be tagged before October 31st of the year the animal was born. Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, I have asked testifiers in favor of this bill to submit written testimony, but today I have John Zahnmiller from Bluffland Whitetails to testify the merits of House File 1727. With that, I will turn it over to our testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. Mr. Zahnmiller, introduce yourself for the record. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is John Zahnmiller. I am with Bluffland Whitetails Association, and I've been authorized to speak today on House File 1727. As some of you may or may not know, Bluffland Whitetails is a group representing thousands of people in southeast Minnesota. This is farmers, hunters, conservationists, and landowners. We're focused on preserving and enhancing Minnesota's whitetail wild herd. We speak in favor of the bill that includes double fencing, restrictions on new registrations, movement restriction, extending the quarantine period, and the transfer of the farm survey program to the DNR. I would like to speak specifically on a couple of those things. That would be, the first is the transfer of the duties to the Department of Natural Resources. We believe it's important for people to know that this bill does not advocate for changing the rules. It simply moves the responsibility for administration, oversight, policy decisions to the Department of Natural Resources. The rules that are changing are not tied to the transfer of that program. Changing the period of time for the quarantine to 10 years makes sense. As we know, prions do not disintegrate. An additional 5 years buys time for the science to catch up. The most obvious vector for transmission is from movement, whether it be organized or by accident. By limiting the movement of farmed cervidae, we take what is effectively the lowest hanging fruit for the transmission of chronic wasting disease. Our members have always supported double fencing at 120 inches. We can provide this committee with enough time of a photograph of snow drifting up onto a fence, which effectively negates an 8-foot fence's usefulness. A 10-foot fence will provide better protection to both the domestic and the wild herd. Double fencing is absolutely essential. As Michelle Karstensen has testified at Board of Animal Health meetings, that they have the documentation of wild deer and farm survey meeting touching noses through fences. With that in mind, we believe that it is in the best interest of the people of the state, who are ultimately the beneficiaries of the work that the legislature and the state agencies do, that this bill be moved for inclusion in the omnibus bill adopted by this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zahnmiller. Next up is Tony Quillis, Minnesota Elk Breeders Association.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time to make a couple comments today on House File 1727. For the record, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm representing the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. Mr. Chairman, in Section 1, that would require, the way I interpret it, would require double fencing for all the elk facilities in the state of Minnesota. Just want to point out that that would result in a rather large, substantial cost to the folks that I represent. Also, Mr. Chairman, in just doing some quick research, I can find no other state that requires double fencing for the cervid industry. Mr. Chairman, also in regards to the second fence that be required, we're just wondering if shade cloth could be required or would be acceptable, or electric wire, what that second fence would entail, Mr. Chairman. In regards to the A2 amendment, my comments previously from the House File 219 stand. I think the concerns are addressed in the current Board of Animal Health rulemaking process, and I think the language is in conflict with each other. Mr. Chairman, in regards to the change from 5 to 10 years for the fencing and no raising, I'd love to see the science behind that, Mr. Chairman. At least from what I've been able to see, the Board of Animal Health and the Department of Natural Resources talk about an incubation period of between 1 and 3 years. So why we go from 5 to 10, I'd love to see that science, Mr. Chairman. But I'd like to focus my comments on Section 5. Mr. Chairman, I don't think, in my opinion, the Department of Natural Resources has the capacity, the staff, or the expertise to implement all the rules that would be required in the statutes and in Minnesota rules, and especially by August of 2021. I mean, those rules and statutes require inspection, record keeping, trace outs, certification, surveillance status, and I just don't think that the Department of Natural Resources has the capacity to be able to carry that out. Mr. Chairman, finally, elk are defined as livestock, such as just as cattle and turkey and hogs are. And we believe that elk, since they're livestock, should be regulated by the Board of Animal Health. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll stick around for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Mr. Spreck, Minnesota Deer Farmers Association.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Tim Spreck, representing the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. Mr. Chair, you've heard me speak extensively about the items in the A2 amendment on at least 2 different occasions. Our comments are still valid and our concerns still stand. I'm going to move on to the body of the bill now. In sections 1 and 2 with regard to fencing, there's no data that show increased fence heights or double fencing will do anything to stop escapes. It just doesn't exist. There are currently no known escapes over the current 8-foot fences that we're able to find. And this, I think, can be substantiated by the Board of Animal Health. And no science really does show that there's a transfer of CWD prions through the fence. What we're understanding is that this is more of a theory, and whether or not it's valid, we really don't know. But the reality is, from people that I talk to, in order to transfer enough saliva for CWD prions to be transmitted from one deer to another, a wild deer that had CWD would actually have to be in the fence licking for an extended period of time with a captive deer for there to be any danger. So, Mr. Chair, what we have here is a slate of rules that are intended to over-regulate. And the reality is that we're going to drive a lot of cervid farmers out of business because of these type of items. Under section 3, no new deer farms. The deer farm and the new deer farm is the lifeblood of the industry. This gives the opportunity to sell breeding stock. Some of our farmers also are in the feed business and the infrastructure business. If we don't have any new deer farms, we're going to severely limit the ability of our farmers to do business. And this would also force many people into a decision whether or not they're even going to be able to stay in business. Under section 4, for no new movement or no movement, this also would preclude sales between farms. It would not allow any deer to be moved to any kind of an exhibition. We have people who do exhibitions at various sporting events, etc. The deer are on a closed herd, on a closed farm. They get loaded onto a trailer, they move to exhibition, they move back, they don't touch other deer. This precludes that, and it's a substantial piece of the living for some of the people that engage in this activity. This would force them to decide if they're going to stay in business or not. Under section 4, fencing after detection, there's really no science to prove that CWD remains on the premises for 10 years. What we're doing, again, is we're legislating an overkill. And whether it's designed intentionally or not, this puts undue burden on a person's property rights and locks up their property for an additional 5 years. It could cause additional problems from a legal standpoint as well. Under section 5, transfer to the DNR, Mr. Quillis made some good points on this. I'm going to add a couple things and edit my testimony as I go. In the past, DNR has testified that they're not particularly interested in taking this on. They've also testified in the past that they don't have proper staff, including veterinarians. We're not aware that they have any veterinarians on staff that could do the job that the Board of Animal Health is currently doing. Mr. Chair, also, the transfer would require duplication of staff within the DNR that the Board of Animal Health already has, which would cause a duplicity and increase the cost of running this agency, because they're going to have to contract with or hire additional persons. Currently, the DNR has the ability to enter a farm servant facility if they perceive that a violation is taking place. They do have a lot of rights from the enforcement standpoint, and we're not comfortable with the DNR moving in and taking over administration from the Board of Animal Health. Mr. Chair, in conclusion, this bill really does nothing to stop the spread of chronic wasting disease. In the past 12 months, there's been one very small farming operation with a small number of deer that had CWD. It is not rampant, it is not widespread. And this bill also has serious other concerns for the farmers, including constitutional property rights violations and a statutory taking without compensation. We stand completely opposed to all the provisions in this bill and hope that the chair and the committee will take our testimony into consideration. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Commissioner Meyer, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And thank you, Representative Eklund, for continuing this discussion on this important topic. I think it's important to note that the language in the bill about transfers of duties would follow a standard statutory process whereby existing farm service statutes and rules would remain in effect and the corresponding personnel would transfer to the DNR. So the staffing issue would be dealt with. There would be no duplication. There's a process whereby duties are transferred from one agency to another in statute. As far as the fencing contact, we have seen, I could demonstrate, show the committee pictures of nose-to-nose contact occurring where trails are embedded along the fences of some farms that we've investigated. So I think there is grave concern about that captive wild animal contact that is occurring right now, and we're appreciative of that fact being addressed in your bill. I think we're working very closely with the Board of Animal Health, Mr. Chairman, to address some of these issues, but obviously if it's the legislature's intent to transfer those duties to the department, we would make sure that they're done in an efficient and expedited fashion to make sure there's no gap in coverage. And it's safe to say that there are concerns out there about moving animals, about animal to animal contact. And these issues, I think, in this bill help to address some of those concerns. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Colonel Rodman Smith, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources.
Mr. Chairman, I believe Colonel Smith is in another committee on another bill, so I apologize he's not able to join us right now.
And also, Beth Thompson with the Board of Animal Health is available for questions. So we have a number, Commissioner Meyer, I think we'll start into questions because we have a number of them, and then we may come back to Colonel Smith when he arrives. So we'll go with Representative Backer, then Representative Green, then Representative Lewick, and then Representative Becker-Finn. Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chair. I have one question here, and I don't know this is to the author or one of the other testifiers, but the effective dates on this bill seems super tight, in my opinion. Is it really realistic to expect the farmers and the DNR, and we know how, just to get this done in within just a few months seems to be extremely tight?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Backer, I'd certainly be willing to talk to the agencies about changing those dates. As you know, this bill is going to the Ag Committee next, so if we need to move the dates out because of restrictions or how long it takes, I'd certainly be willing to take a look at that on the next amendment, next committee stop.
Representative Backer.
Thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions for the author. First of all, Representative Eklund, have you been keeping up with the advancements in some of the testing and some of the other universities across the country and what they're finding about CWD?
I've been following some of that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Green. I've been following some of that. I do know that there's live testing that may be coming forward, but I do not believe that it's been approved yet for use.
Representative Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund. I think it has been approved in certain places. They are using it in other states. And I did hear, but I haven't had a chance to look at it, that the USDA maybe have approved some of those live tests as well. And so the next question is that this bill is essentially going to put these deer farmers out of business. Have you talked to the deer farmers and see if there's money available to buy these people out, if we're going to destroy their livelihood, is there any talk about a buyout?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not had any conversations about a buyout with that. Representative Green, I do know there is some buyout provisions if they come back through USDA, if they come back with positive, but I'm not sure what any other buyout provisions that we've talked about or have talked about for Cervid farmers.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, have you talked to any of the deer farmers at all, Representative Eklund?
Representative Eklund.
I've talked to a couple of them in my district. I believe that they are not happy with what we are trying to do with this bill, but I also know that they are the ones that are doing things correctly and by the book as much as possible and that they will adapt.
Mr. Chair, one last question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Representative Eklund, do you or are you aware of if there's any special considerations or what would have to be done, I guess, to actually transfer employees from the Board of Animal Health to the DNR? Because that's what it sounds like this is going to do. Is there a process for that? If we're not going to add any money or any employees, how does that process work?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, I think Assistant Commissioner Meyer talked about that a little bit. I'd like to have somebody from the agency that can address what would happen on that because I don't know.
Commissioner Meyer. Yep. Commissioner Meyer.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, I was on mute. I apologize. The process is outlined in statute. If you look at the language in the bill, so it's going to be using the process in Minnesota statutes 15.039 to transfer staff from the board to the state, to the Department of Natural Resources. And actually those statutes and rules would transfer with that. So I can just quickly here pull up that statute if you like, or maybe Ms. Taylor could talk about how that process works if she has it in front of her.
Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair and members, the process is lined out as Assistant Commissioner Meyer stated in 15.039, and there's a number of different subdivisions, but it talks about how personnel would be transferred along with the duties, as well as any unexpended funds and any obligations and the rules. In practice, I don't know exactly how that functions at the department, but it's all laid out in statute.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a short comment. I see this happen a lot, and I don't think it's fair to say that the Board of Animal Health has not been doing its job. I think that they've been out there doing their work. It's just that some people apparently don't like the conclusions that they've come to or the way things are going, and so now they're going to transfer this over. I don't know if this is precedented or not. Take the this kind of a issue from the Board of Animal Health over and stick it into the Department of Natural Resources, but I think that this is a dangerous step. This is not really a very good idea.
Maybe to interject, Commissioner Meyer, when was the authority transferred from the DNR to the Board of Animal Health? Was that in 2002? It used to be in the DNR, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the specific dates, but there was a transfer of the program to the Board of Animal Health approximately during that time frame.
We've got somewhat limited time here and four members up. So Representative Lewick and then Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My research indicates that transfer took place 2004, and it was based on pretty much inadequate ability of the DNR to deal with that situation. But quick question, I guess, right off the bat for the author. Are you aware of how many elk and deer farms right now are at current level 6 with respect to their chronic wasting disease rating?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewick, no, I am not.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you explain to us, Representative Eklund, what level 6 is, what it means?
Representative Eklund.
Not at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not at this time, Representative Lewick. I'd have to get back to you on that.
Okay, well, thank you. It means they haven't had a positive in 5 consecutive years of testing. And that was put in place because of some of the flaws in the original system that was underway with the DNR about 16 years ago. Second, does your bill effectively end white-tailed deer farming in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. No, I do not believe it does.
I guess a question for the author then.
Representative Lewick.
Yeah. If you can't get a new license and you can't transfer a deer, what's going to happen to those folks that eventually pass away that have deer?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. I'm guessing that we'll have to take a look at that when the time comes if the family wants to continue operating it.
One quick follow-up, and again, this is for the bill author. Are you aware of the dual duties that a number of people fulfill in the Board of Animal Health, where when we reach an issue with, regardless of what animal disease it is, those people are pulled from what they're doing and they're mustered, kind of all hands on deck, a term we're both familiar with, and they will be moved in some cases with USDA personnel. Have you discussed this with the DNR on how that would work with your bill here? Were the DNR willing to just give up their people assuming that this went through, and just be moved immediately over under the auspices of the Board of Animal Health again to battle?
I think we lost you there, but Representative Eklund, can you answer the question? Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lewick, I believe that when we do this, it's not a matter of whether the DNR will want to move their people to do it. They will have to move their people to do it. It will be in statute.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Eklund, for including the Adopt a Dumpster provision. That's been a popular program that's been used by deer hunters throughout the state, and I appreciate you including that in the A2 amendment. And I thank Representative Eklund for bringing this forward. I think to say that this bill would do nothing to stop CWD is honestly disrespectful to the work that you have been doing in this area, and just completely inaccurate. And I do want to clear up a few things. We've taken lots of testimony in this committee about CWD and the actual science. We've heard from many scientists from the U of M and other places about CWD, and we know that it can be passed through a fence. We know that deer do escape, and we know that this is an endemic to certain parts of our state. And I think it's important that the testimony we heard today was from the Bluffland Whitetails Group, because that area in southern Minnesota has really been hit the hardest by CWD, and that impacts the local economy. It impacts local folks' ability to feed their families, honestly. And so it is important that we hear those voices. I think, you know, the bottom line is that the Board of Animal Health has been doing their job, but I think that they see their job. And what I have really seen is that, and what we heard in the testimony today is that, you know, front and center is the business interest and the ability to make money off of different things involving, captive cervids. And the reality is that our job here on the Natural Resources Committee is to protect our natural resources. And ultimately, that's why it makes sense to give it back to the DNR, because that is, at the end of the day, that is their job, to protect our natural resources and not to put the business interests first. The reality is that we have a constitutional amendment that requires us to put those hunting rights above the interests of people making money off of selling urine or selling the ability to shoot them, or doing the traveling zoo kind of thing. At the end of the day, hunting and the taking of game are a valued part of our heritage that shall be forever preserved for the people and shall be managed by law and regulation for the public good. That's in our constitution. And so I think it's really important that be top of mind as we're having this discussion. I had a buyout proposal a couple years ago, and folks didn't like that either. And finally, I have a question for the author. I'm wondering, Representative Eklund, have you talked to deer hunters, and what are you hearing from deer hunters when you talk about your bill?
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Becker-Finn, the deer hunters that I have talked to in my district are overwhelmingly have been in favor of this. They are very concerned that chronic wasting disease will make its way north, and they do not want to see its impact on that could happen on the wild herd.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know there are others on the list, but I thank you, Representative Eklund. That's what I'm hearing from my constituents too. And frankly, over the last, 4 years that we've been having these discussions, I've heard from so many people that are like, why doesn't the DNR have control over this? Why aren't we giving this back to the DNR? And so I think, what I'm hearing from folks is finally, we are finally taking this step that needs to be taken, even if it's difficult and even if nobody wants to be dealing with this problem. The reality is that we have a duty to deal with this problem because our constitution requires us to do that. So thank you very much for Representative Eklund for your work on this bill. I think we really, this could be a huge step in taking some additional needed action to stop the spread of CWD in our state.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you. And for the, I think this is for the bill author. Looking at the provision about the, the hunter harvested deer and, who retains ownership of that and an escaped animal, I'm wondering if there can be a timeline added. Obviously, it's too late to do it right now, but the thing is, this goes forward, that they have to report to the farm owner within a certain amount of time. Thinking of the animal needs to be tested and, to see if they have CWD. And I mean, that the clock is ticking once the animal is harvested. And just wondering if you would consider putting on a timeline when, if a hunter harvests an escaped deer, if they should have a certain amount of time to be able to report that to the farm owner so that, the testing can properly happen. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, I think that's a little bit addressed with the owner, the farmer must report it within 24 hours of the escape. And the timeline is if a hunter harvests escape survey, that's why we'd have the tagging in place so they can find out where it escaped from and who the owner was. And I would assume that they would want to get it. I mean, this bill will make it a lot to get it tested, but I'd assume if they saw they'd shot an escaped survey that they'd want to get it tested anyway for their own peace of mind.
Nelson.
Yeah, follow up if I might, please. And I think it would be good to put in there that, they have, a very certain amount. I mean, the farm has, 24 hours to report or act immediately to the DNR if it's escaped. And I think it would be, if a hunter harvested, I think it would be a prudent thing to immediately, upon recovery of the animal, to notify the farm so that, this animal can be tested. So thank you.
Thanks. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Eklund, for bringing this forward and your leadership on this issue. Mr. Chair, I don't know if we have folks from the University of Minnesota here, but I want to put it on the record to see if we could potentially have the University of Minnesota come forward to talk about some of the research on how CWD is impacting our ecology, understanding that I think there's some research out there saying how the prion can travel and, remain in soil, water. And so how is that going to impact, drinking water going forward and our ecology going forward? And so I also just wanted to highlight, the university's work around their outreach and engagement. Mr. Chair, maybe it'll be worthwhile for us to call them back in to talk about the research and the outreach and effort. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Is Dr. Larson in? And this somewhat answers one of the previous questions that this budget area has provided support for CWD, and that is part of the reason why we have jurisdiction, because in 2019, funds from here were spent for Board of Animal Health or authorized for Board of Animal Health activities. We are supposed to be having quarterly updates. Senator Ingebrigtsen and I had agreed to have quarterly meetings. The last one was in August, so it will be time again. Hopefully we can get through the deadlines here, Representative Heinzman, and be able to have some hearings not under the pressure of that deadline. So I don't see, Representative Lee, I don't see the university here, but we will attempt to get them in front of the committee soon. Representative Heinzman.
couple of comments and then a question for the bill author. I think it's important to note that everybody on this committee understands that CWD is a very serious issue, and how it is spread is being researched and being very closely monitored all around the entire country, if not the world, and has been for a long time. But it is complicated, and we're doing our best to figure it out. I think there's a reason that this bill has been heard so many times and has been rejected so many times, is because I don't know that there's any data to support one way or the other as to whether fences will resolve this issue and to what level, or whether eliminating deer farms will clear the landscape of CWD and the prions that that we know to exist in nature. I think it's reasonable to assume that we've got to continue to look at this at a high level and examine the opportunities to really make a difference. And if the bill author could demonstrate that, I think that it would go somewhere. But I don't think that we're really to that point yet that we can lay blame and say, well, deer farms are the problem, or carcasses coming across the border are the problem. We've really got to work with the folks in science to get this thing up to speed. And we did appropriate money from the LCCMR, over $1 million, to the University of Minnesota to further develop live testing. You know, we've really moved the needle on that, and we will continue to support those efforts. Unfortunately, I don't think this bill or transfer of duties or higher fences is going to solve the problem. I think the bill author's heart is in the right place, but I just don't think that the answers are clearly defined. They give us a perfect path forward. I can't support the bill because of some of the difficulties that are created. And I think that's part of the reasons why the bill hasn't gone anywhere and probably won't. But I do appreciate the conversation. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if the Representative Eklund wants to respond, that's fine.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Heintzman. I agree this is a challenging issue. My number one goal is to protect the health of the wild deer herd in the state of Minnesota, as I think a lot of us have those same intentions. And I look at it as just, this is just one way to try to do that.
Representative Eklund renews his motion that House File 1727, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee. Adam, would you take the roll?
Hanson, Rick.
Aye.
Hanson, aye. Wasilewick, Amy.
Wasilewick, aye.
Wasilewick, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
No.
Heintzman, no. Acom, Patty.
Acom, aye.
Acom, aye. Eklund, Susan.
Eklund, no.
Eklund, no. Backer, Jeff.
Backer votes no.
Backer, no. Beckerfin, Jamie.
Aye.
Beckerfin, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. Igo, Spencer.
No.
Igo, no. Jordan, Sydney.
Aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Tama.
Tice, no.
Tice, no. That is 11 ayes and 8 noes.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee. The next bill up, we're going to move the agenda around. Representative Lee's bill is going to be House File 644. And we have about 20 minutes allocated for this. So 2:05, we will intend to vote or earlier. So Representative Lee, Environment Permit Violation Recovery. Representative Lee, would you like to move that House File 644 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lee, I believe you have an author's amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the A1 amendment deletes references to the Minnesota Department of Health and directs the MPCA to collecting money from enforcement settlement or litigation over $250,000, as mentioned in the overall bill, and transfer it to the applicable community health board of the community that's been impacted by a permit violation, and also allow for the Community Health Board to recover administrative costs. And that is the amendment.
Representative Lee moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Ayes have it. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lee, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 644 as amended. This bill came from several discussions I had with my constituents regarding the Minnesota's Pollution Control Agency's 2017 enforcement settlement of $2.5 million worth of Northern Meadows Recycling in my district. At that time, community members were concerned that of the $2.5 million settlement, only $600,000 was coming back to community to help them deal with some of the health impacts of the pollution. And as I have shared several times in the committee, where we have some of the highest disproportionate asthma rates in the state, you know, in my district and, you know, the surrounding community, representing Jordan across the Mississippi River. And just to provide context for members, currently money recovered by the MPCA in litigation or in settlement of a permit violation that could have resulted in litigation is state money and must be deposited in the general fund. And so my bill will create an exception when the MPCA recovers $250,000 or more in litigation or an enforcement settlement from a permit violation and requires 40% of the money recovered to be distributed to the local community health board where the facility is located. The MPCA must notify the applicable community health board within 30 days of a final court order in the litigation or the effective date of the settlement agreement and collect the money and transfer it to the applicable community health board. And the health board must meet with the local community impacted by the permit violation and incorporate their concerns into a public health project that benefits the community. With the amendment we adopted, the community health board may recover the administrative costs related to the provision of my proposal. And this proposal directs the transfer and use of money only and does not create a right of intervention in the litigation or settlement of the enforcement action for any person or entity. And Mr. Chair, with me today is a local public health staff from the city of Minneapolis to share some of the work they are doing with the 2019 appropriation of $200,000 from the Environmental Fund for enhanced blood lead testing, lead poisoning prevention efforts, and asthma education as recommended by the Northern Meadows Consent Decree Advisory Committee.
So Representative Lee, the first testifier is Lisa Smested, is that correct? Ms. Smested. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Smested, and I'm the manager of the Lead Hazard Control and Healthy Homes Unit for the Minneapolis Health Department. I'm here today to testify in favor of House File 644. Minneapolis has been the recipient of a legal settlement as a result of a lawsuit driven by the MPCA with a company that repeatedly violated their permits. Minneapolis serves as one example of how these funds can be used to benefit the community that was harmed. The settlement funds from the lawsuit with Northern Meadows were given to the Minneapolis Health Department to provide education and outreach on lead hazards, provide blood lead testing, education and outreach on asthma triggers, and mitigation of asthma hazards and effects. The City Council created an advisory committee composed of residents and health professionals with the task to advise on how the settlement fund should be divided between the four criteria in the settlement and how best to do outreach in the impacted areas. The products and services provided by these funds were targeted to children who are most impacted by pollution in their environment. As a result of these recommendations, children have had blood lead tests, families have received home lead education visits, and products to mitigate lead dust hazards. Families have also received education on asthma triggers and received products that are known to mitigate asthma triggers in their immediate environment, such as allergen bedding encasement, HEPA air cleaners, and integrated pest management. Asthma is the number one cause for children missing school. These types of interventions that we did are evidence-based and as are a result of research that was conducted here in Minnesota in previous years and have shown to improve school attendance. These services would not have been possible to be provided at this scale without these settlement funds. There are many current models for how funds can be spent to benefit communities that have been exposed to pollution. There are programs like the Clean Air Repairs Program that provide repairs to car owners in low-income neighborhoods, which reduce air pollution from car emissions, or the Green Cost Share Program, which assists businesses to switch equipment or processes that result in less pollution in our neighborhoods. By spending these funds on projects that go back to the community that was harmed, the community receives resources to address the health impacts of pollution and may be used to reduce future pollution in their homes and neighborhoods. Thank you for this opportunity to testify before this committee, and I can answer any questions you have on how this has been working in Minneapolis.
Thank you. Ms. Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify. My name is Greta Gauthier, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chair and members, the MPCA has worked on this language with Representative Lee over the past couple of sessions. We do support the environmental justice intent and goals of this bill. However, we have a neutral position overall because the bill has a fiscal impact but does not, but is not included in the governor's budget recommendations. Over the past few years, as Representative Lee said, the agency has seen some major enforcements, particularly Northern Metals in Minneapolis and Water Gremlin in White Bear Township. Communities are very concerned about violations and impact on public health, and this bill gives community residents input on projects that would be funded through this bill, and we think that is important. Mr. Chair, in the past 5 years, there have been three instances where the PCA has recovered penalties for permit violations where those penalties were over $250,000. We really don't know how many we would have in the future or what the dollar amounts would be. I can tell you the average penalty amount over a five-year period is about $53,000. Enforcement penalties do not contribute directly to MPCA's current agency budget or programs. When we receive them, they are compiled and come out to about 1% of the agency's biennial budget. So the MPCA would serve as fiscal agent under this bill, which is fine with us. About 38% of our budget is passed through grants, so we know how to do this work. But just to be clear, Mr. Chairman, MPCA would not have any role or involvement in any of the projects that would be funded under this bill. That concludes my testimony, and I'm happy to stand for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I believe we have Representative Green.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions popped up here while I was listening to testimony. Are the community health boards, to the author, I guess, have you spoken to your community health boards? Would they be able to manage this in a reasonable manner, timely manner?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Green for the questions. We are having discussions with the local health board, and that is why we are going over to the health committee to get that concern addressed.
Representative Green.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question. Is there anything in this bill that would allow for these funds to be used, say, if this was in the water or in the air, if it was either downstream or downwind and goes into other communities, is there stipulations in the bill that would allow some of the money to go outside that district?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Green. Right now, that's something that we could continue to work on. If you feel like that's something that, you know, could get your support on that, I'm open to working with you to address, to make sure that, you know, any of these pollution violation doesn't, you know, impact any communities that may be upstream or downstream of some of these violations.
Representative Green, final.
Thank you. Then just a question for the MPCA. You know, you said you're neutral on the bill and it won't affect your budget at all, or at least that's the interpretation I got. So if you're administering the funds, do you have a process then that you would be deciding where the funds go as far as if they go to the in the district or outside the district?
Commissioner Gauthier.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Green, for your question. The intent and the determination of the projects would be done at the local level. We do have a grants staff that manage a lot of grants. As I said earlier, 38% of our budget is pass-through grants. So I'm sorry, could you repeat what your question was, or does that answer your question, Senator Representative Green?
Representative Green.
Not really, Ms. Gothier. The question was, if you're going to be administering the grants, will you be the deciding factor as to who gets the grants?
Mr. Chair Gothier, or Representative Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Green, to that question, the NPCA will not be administering the grants. If you look at the language, they are collecting and transfer it to the local health board, and the local health board will be meeting with the a community that's, you know, where the permitted facility is located. And I think that's where, you know, the local community could, you know, provide the input to the local health board. And they feel like, you know, they want to address some of the concerns that you have, that they could do so.
Did that answer your question, Representative Green?
Well, not really. There's still some more questions. I have some questions on the bill, but I think we'll move on. I know you're short.
Yep.
So I'll probably not be supporting the bill right now.
Representative Heintzman, and Representative Fisher, and Representative Wallach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lee, as I'm reading lines 2.21 through 2.33, I am wondering if we could have incorporated some more guardrails into this. And the reason I bring that up is I have some experience with a local group here in Crow Wing County. I was a chair of the Crow Wing County Human Rights Commission, and believe it or not, when there is a fine imposed on a local business for a human rights violation, at least at that time, the money was split between the local group and the state. And so that particular organization, unfortunately, mishandled those funds and was dissolved by Crow Wing County because of a misappropriation of funds. And as I'm reading, say, line 2.33, I'm seeing that the money can be distributed to some project that benefits the population. Are these community health boards required under your language to have a fiscal agent, or what kind of accountability have you written into this bill? And I see that it references 145A.02 on line 2.25. So, you know, maybe there's something there, but I'm not seeing it here in the language.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heisman. So the local health board are under the jurisdiction of the Department of Health, and we could, you know, if you have any concerns there, we could get that addressed when we have a hearing in the Department of Health.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee. I'm definitely going to need to have some more information. I wish you had that here today. It's too bad you don't. But on lines 2.33, where it's talking about the projects that benefit the population of that affected area, I'm assuming. Can you give me an example? Because I'm not seeing any guardrails here to indicate what a benefit to that population could look like. I mean, I'm assuming that it's not improving landscaping or buying cars, but I'm really not seeing those guardrails here in the language.
Assembly.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heintzman. I do want to make it clear that local public health are a public entity, and so there are public oversight over that. And regarding the projects, that's why we're putting it in statute, so that, you know, whatever the community identify as the harm to them and the solutions that they want to see, that's what we're allowing for them to have, you know, with the language that we have in place. And if you feel like, you know, you want some more guardrail, I'm open to suggestions as we work this through the legislative process, Representative Heintzman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heintzman.
Yeah, the equity experience that I've unfortunately had to go through as a chair of that commission, I would highly recommend that you put guardrails in place. To say that a project benefit in that population area without any guardrails, that's really open to a whole lot of interpretation. So yeah, I'll be happy to work with you on this and try to put some benefits in place or some guardrails in place that benefit that community in the context of the injury that may have impacted that group of people.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lee, thank you for bringing this bill forward. This is a great bill that really can get to addressing the issues around when harm has been done to a community, to be able to take that money and be able to invest back in the community for corrective actions. I know that up in our area of White Bear Lake, the stipulation agreement came out, and the stipulation agreement said we'll plant 1,500 trees in the local community. Well, after communities had cancer-causing chemicals put out for over 17 years above the threshold, that is very, very harmful. So I appreciate where you're going. I really like the portion in there that you have about making sure that they're meeting with the public, engaging with the population on a regular basis. And I appreciate the flexibility, encourage you to keep the flexibility in there, because the solution for every community is going to look different. And I really appreciate how you're allowing that flexibility of what the community really wants to be able to have that engaged in the process, whether it's long-term monitoring or there's some kind of correction. So thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't really have a response to that. Just say that I appreciate that comments from Representative Fisher, and you know, understanding that the situation that you have to go through yourself, Representative Becker-Fenn, Representative Wozlawick. I hope that, you know, we could get this through, and that, you know, with the threshold that we have, you know, of 250,000, you know, the commissioner has said that over the last 5 years, there's only been three cases that have met that threshold, and we have to understand that these are pretty serious violations. You know, I can't really speak to the details of that. I think the MPCA could speak more to that too, but understand that we are, you know, trying to address some of the most serious violation in the state of Minnesota, and not going after what commissioner has said, you know, those average cases of around $50,000 or so.
Representative Blauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to echo what Representative Fisher said. I've been meeting with my local community group, who's been very engaged on the water gremlin issue, as we are still working through the process there. There are still things that water gremlin is looking to fix. And I know that one of the biggest concerns that I heard from folks in my community was that they wanted more of a say in what happened with the money. So they were essentially left out of the entire process. They were never asked what they wanted. They were never even given any idea of what sorts of things could happen with the money that was being sort of given to the state from the company with this fine and these penalties. And I think it's a really important piece of the conversation, and the communities know what's best for them, what best meets their needs. And it's not a thing where they take 5 minutes to discuss this. The community group that I worked with has had several very long conversations about what they wanted to see. They've talked with lots of folks impacted by this, particularly those who have had really negative health impacts from the pollution. And I think that's a really important piece to remember, is that the communities are in the best position to be able to say what would best benefit them based on the harms that have happened in these facilities. So I want to thank Representative Lee for bringing this bill forward, and think it's a really good, important next step.
Representative Lee, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, for the opportunity to present this. And, you know, in striving to do this, I just want to help out, you know, those communities that will be hopefully we don't have any future impact in the state of Minnesota, that, you know, the businesses that are operating here are operating under the conditions of the permit. But knowing that in the last 5 years, there's been three pretty significant cases, I just want to bring this forward so that if your community is impacted, they don't have to go through the struggle of, you know, what's going on in my district today. And I urge member support.
Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 644 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick.
Aye. 21.
Hanson, aye. Wozlawick, Amy.
Wozlawick, aye.
Wozlawick, aye. Heitzeman, Josh.
No.
Heitzeman, no. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, no.
Acklin, no. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, no.
Backer, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Eckerfin, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. I go, Spencer.
No.
I go, no. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Lewick, Dale. Sorry, I skipped over you.
Luick, no.
No. Tice, Tama.
Oh, you screwed me up. Tama, aye. No. Tama, no.
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 Tice, no.
Tice, no.
That is 11 ayes and 8 noes.
The motion is approved. House File 644 is on its way to the next committee. Vice Chair Wozlawick, would you like to take the gavel?
Yes, I will do that, Chair Hansen. Next on the agenda is House File 1562. That's the next one, correct?
Or, yes.
That's next. Okay, just want to make sure there's two here. So, Chair Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I will move that House File 1562 be recommended to be re-referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Committee.
Representative Hansen also has an author's amendment. Representative Hansen, will you move that amendment and explain it briefly?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'll move the A2 amendment, and I'd like to incorporate an oral amendment to the A2 amendment on page 3, line 4, delete 2020 and insert 2022.
Representative Hansen incorporates the changes into that A2 amendment. We'll put that oral amendment in there. Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment with those changes incorporated. Representative Hansen to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment with the incorporation does the following. It deletes section 1 of the bill, includes language from Representative Jordan's House File 1210 as amended that prohibits neonicotinoids and chlorpyrifos on state lands, includes language from Representative Vang's turtle bill, House File 387, deletes Blaze Pink, requires non-toxic shots on WMAs in the farmland zone started July 1, 2022, and that bill has been passed off the House floor a couple of times.
Representative Hansen moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the 2021 DNR policy bill. I have Ms. Annalee Garlitz to walk through the DNR provisions in the bill.
Ms. Garlitz, if you would introduce yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Annalee Garlitz and I'm with the Department of Natural Resources. Today I'll walk through the bill, our 2021 policy bill as it was introduced. You should have a fact sheet there in front of you. It was attached to the meeting posting as well for those watching online. This bill is much shorter than our 2020 policy bill, so I should be able to get through it pretty quickly. Section 1 of the bill as introduced, which has now been amended, this particular piece was brought to DNR's attention through some discussions that we had, and this would amend Section 11A.236, and it would allow DNR to invest financial assurance money collected from mining permits through the State Board of Investment. Section 2 amends 84.946 to adjust the reporting deadline for natural resource asset preservation and replacements projects. This would just allow us to get the information in so that we could have a more complete and comprehensive report to the legislature. Section 3 amends Minnesota Statute 85.054 to waive the state vehicle permit for guests staying overnight on state park open house days. So when there is an open state park open house day, if somebody's staying overnight, they wouldn't have to pay the entrance fee until they check out in the next morning. And that's how it's been in practice, and we just wanted to make sure that we had that in statute. Section 4 amends Minnesota Statute 94B.055 to make it illegal to shoot a decoy placed by a conservation officer from a vehicle. And that clarifies some statute based on, it's my understanding, some court proceedings that have happened. Section 5 amends 94B.071 to require blaze orange or pink for blinds on public land during the deer firearms season. Section 6 amends 97B.811 to allow motorized decoys throughout the waterfall season. Section 7 amends 97C.605. to prohibit the taking of turtles using firearms, bows, and spears. And this was also part of a bill that you had before you that Representative Vang carried. And same with Section 8. We also included this in Representative Vang's bill, which amends 97C.611 to prohibit the take of spiny softshell turtles due to vulnerability of the species and DNR's concerns about the population of the species. And with that, I will stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Garlitz. We also have Ann Pierce from the DNR, I understand, here to answer questions as well. That's all I have for testifiers. If members have questions about the bill, I see Representative Heintzman.
Yeah, I have a number of questions. We have obviously discussed many of the provisions in the amendment. So I'm not gonna go over those as I'd like to, but you know, one of the issues that I would take with the presentation of the bill is that this is the DNR policy bill. Well, there are elements, there's no question that are, but there are some controversial elements that were introduced in the amendment, and that is a part of the bill as we're discussing it today. So I would just mention that because of those amendments, unfortunately, I can't support what would otherwise be, I think, a lot of important changes that DNR would like to make. And, you know, I hope in the process that we have an opportunity to vote for something that we can agree on, something that DNR brought to the committee. Unfortunately, we don't have that opportunity today. So, you know, I'm going to leave it at that. I suppose other members may have some questions. I may just quickly ask one, Representative Hansen. So, you know, there's been a long, long battle over Blaze Pink. And here again, we're going to take away that opportunity for those like my family. We've spent a pretty significant amount of money because some of the members of my family really appreciate the opportunity to buy a little bit different kind of clothing when it comes to deer hunting. And you're going to pick on those folks and tell them, nope, you can't use that anymore during deer hunting. And, you know, I think we've all beat to death the horse that there are a very small number of folks that have difficulty seeing Blaze Pink. But, you know, I just don't think it justifies the removal of that opportunity for those. And I hope you have some comments for those folks that have spent quite a lot of money getting ready. I mean, you might remember your grandfather's clothing from deer hunting. He probably wore it for many years like mine. In the case of my grandfather, he wore the same thing for about 30 years. You know, and now we're telling people that you may have made an investment. Now we're going to take that away. Could you please explain?
Thank you.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Heintzman. You are correct. We used to wear red clothing, our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents, and then Blaze Orange was developed and implemented. The provision that was in the DNR policy bill was allowing on ground blinds the Blaze Orange and the Blaze Pink. So first we're striking the Blaze Pink there. And, you know, what I've seen on ground blinds is they may have a strip or two of the Blaze color. It is hard to see Blaze Pink in there. And we've had testimony, I know you've heard it on the floor, Representative Freiberg is colorblind and having the inability to see it. So yes, there may be a few people who are colorblind, but it just takes, as we know in our gun safety training, it just takes one error if you can't see somebody for a horrible mistake to occur. And so we have debated this on and on before, but the evidence there, you know, this was added after much debate, and for safety, we believe it's important to go back to that Blaze Orange only option rather than having the Blaze Pink.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I have heard those debates, Representative Hansen, as have you. And in the end, the decision was made that this was going to be an option, that that Blaze Pink was going to be available. And to my knowledge, there has not been any incident in the 4 to 5 years that this has been legal, that somebody has been negatively affected. And, you know, to that point, there are those that have difficulty seeing even Blaze Orange. But that doesn't mean that we we decide, you know, to take and completely revamp everything, there is advancements that come along, and who knows what the next advancement might be in technology. Maybe there's a color out there that absolutely everybody can see under every condition. But the truth is, we license people that are colorblind, and I don't think we should take a hunter's rights away if they happen to not be able to see a certain color as well as maybe a majority of folks. It gets into some funny conversations that we wind up having to kind of go through and figure out bit by bit, piece by piece. But I just don't think that it makes any sense to undo, you know, years and years and years of people's investment into a clothing that they would like to use when they hunt. You know, so I'm mentioning that, but of course there's a number of other policy items that you introduced in your amendment, Representative Hansen. And so thank you for the indulgence to have a conversation about this particular one.
Madam Chair.
Chair Hansen.
So this, my understanding of the path is this will go to public safety, primarily for that decoy shooting component, and then it will come back to this committee. And we are going to have to build a bill that goes through not only this committee, but also goes through the floor and gets signed into law. So Representative Heinzman will continue to work with you on these issues. There are things that we disagree with, and we will probably continue to disagree with, but let's keep working on these things. I think, you know, it takes some time sometimes, but we want to make sure that people are safe in the woods, so.
Any other member questions? I'm not seeing any hands raised here. I'll give it a second. All right, Representative Hansen, any closing remarks?
We will see this again. I think it's a good bill. It's incorporated a number of things that we've heard and debated. Representative Jordan's bill, the lead provision is out of the Heritage Enhancement Account, not general fund, and that has been thoroughly vetted over the years. So it asks for your support, and I would renew my motion that 1562 as amended be recommended that we refer to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform and Finance and Policy Committee.
That is a mouthful. Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 1562 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Hansen, Rick.
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Wasilewick, Amy.
Wasilewick, aye.
Wasilewick, aye. Heinzman, Josh.
No.
Heinzman, no. Akam, Patty.
Aye.
Akam, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Backer, Jeff.
Becker votes no.
Becker no. Becker Finn, Jamie. Becker Finn, Jamie. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
No.
Green, no. I go, Spencer.
No.
I go, no. Jordan, Sydney.
Aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Tama.
Tice, no.
All right, we'll circle back. Becker, Finn, Jamie. That is
another committee.
The motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the next committee stop. Next up, we have House File 1820. Chair Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 1820 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the important functions of legislative committees is oversight. And we in this committee provide a lot of money and a lot of authority out to counties and out to watershed districts. And so I was approached to author this bill by the watershed districts. It is being laid over. I think it's important to daylight these concerns, and we have a number of testifiers. Hopefully this conflict between some counties and some watershed districts can get resolved. And that's my purpose for bringing this bill in front of us to get this into the daylight and help on problem resolution. So with that, I would refer to the testifiers.
First up, I have Emily Javins. Ms. Javins, if you would introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Wasilek and members. My name is Emily Javins. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Watershed District, and thank you, Chair Hansen, for authoring the bill for us. House File 1820 has two sections that impact drainage law. What's happening is we have a situation in southern Minnesota where farmers petitioned for improvements to their infrastructure. The Watershed District facilitated the processing of that request as laid out in statute. Found they went through all the steps, everything worked out, the biggest one being the benefits exceeded the costs, and they ordered the project. When they sent the paperwork to the county, however, the county refused to finance it. They did, however, propose that if the Watershed District turned over all control for all their drainage systems, that they would then move forward and finance those projects. The only problem is that the law doesn't allow that. The law specifies that a transfer can go in one direction, from a county to a water management authority. And if the two issues of transfers go the other direction, one of liability, it's very clear in statute that if there's a new project or an improvement, that must go to the Watershed District. So if they turn over control of those, they still have the liability. You don't just have the ability to take or to get rid of your statutory responsibilities. They still have that. And the other thing would, you could end up with a ping pong effect where they can transfer it back and forth every month if they wanted to. The county says, oh man, we're sick of this system. Let's send it to the Watershed District. And Watershed District says, well, we don't want it. Let's send it back. So that's not effective and efficient either. And since there was a disagreement on the interpretation of the law between the county and the Watershed District did use Statute 103A to ask Bowser to intervene and clarify the law. Bowser came back and said the law was pretty clear. The county is required to finance those projects. If they have cash on hand, they can use that. If not, they have the option to bond. And we have been provided that interpretation of the statute in your packet today. Unfortunately, this effort didn't impact the county's view, and they are still putting pressure on the Watershed District to turn over all of their authority and not willing to finance that project. It does make sense for the Watershed Districts to manage these systems. The beauty of Watershed Districts is their mission is water. It's kind of a one focus. They are the masters of figuring out how to do multiple benefits on a project. They can maximize ag productivity while minimizing environmental impact. It's their goal and focus. Not to say that counties can't do that, but when they have so many other priorities, sometimes that does get lost.
Ms. Javins, we do need you to wrap up quickly if you can. We have three other testifiers to get through in our 8 minutes here. Thank you.
Yep. So the modification, this reinforces state policy that when there are projects in a watershed district, drainage projects, that those should be managed by watershed district. That's been around for decades. So I ask for your support for House File 1820. And I have Jan Voigt is the former administrator of the Heron Lake Watershed District, if you have time to hear her testimony.
Yes, Ms. Voigt is next on the list. If you could keep your testimony between 1 to 2 minutes, please. We have other testifiers and questions.
Yes. I don't have a lot to add to what Ms. Javins said, other than to just say that as the former administrator of the Watershed District, we did go through the process. We asked the county to bond for the projects, and they refused, even though the statute says that they must fund projects on our behalf. Not having any other option, we hired a financial advisor and got outside funding with the hopes that we could come to an agreement with the county before the 3-year short-term financing was done. And Emily covered the Bowser letter. And then the only other thing that I wanted to add is that the Watershed District has taken their role as drainage authority seriously and had gone to great lengths to secure outside funding for conservation. four of the appointed watershed district managers that had been vocal about their opposition to relinquishing drainage authority because they did not want to lose the ability to ensure that conservation efforts were done in drainage projects were very outspoken. And over the last 3 years, those four outspoken managers, two in Nobles County, one in Jackson County, and one in Marie County, were not reappointed by their respective counties. And that also led to the reason, one of the reasons why I resigned from the watershed district.
Thank you, Ms. Voigt. Next up, I have John Kolb. Mr. Kolb, if you can introduce yourself and present your testimony, you have 1 to 2 minutes. Please be brief.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am here today on behalf of several counties and watershed districts throughout the state of Minnesota that I represent and have represented for approximately the last 25 years in the area of public drainage. It is unfortunate that the committee has to even hear this bill today. This bill arises from a dispute between Jackson County and the Heron Lake Watershed District, which has essentially been resolved by joint resolutions joint report of two subcommittees, one of the Heron Lake Watershed District and one of Jackson County Board of Commissioners, dated March 5th, 2021. The subcommittee has reached an agreement and both parties intend to enter into a cooperative agreement that will resolve this difference favorably for both parties. To the bill itself, it is redundant in that it restates obligations that are already contained in the Drainage Code, Chapter 103E, Section 651, related to drainage system accounts, and 103E.655, which talks about how the costs of drainage systems and projects are paid for. The issue here has to do with the watershed district undertaking to establish a $10 million drainage improvement, and then upon realizing it did not have the means to or the authority to finance that project, coming to the county and trying to impose a $10 million bonding obligation on the county. And this is why the dispute arose. The dispute has now been resolved and favorably for both parties. As I said, I would encourage the author to withdraw this bill as unnecessary and redundant and confusing to the practice of drainage law and watershed law in the state of Minnesota. And as it was intended to resolve a single issue, which is an outlier in the state, I don't think it's necessary. I will also note that there are several watershed districts throughout the state that have no desire, nor are they focused, nor do they have as their objectives or contained in their watershed management plan to be drainage authorities. And essentially what this bill does is it begins to move in the direction where those—
Thank you, Mr. Cole. We have to move on to our next, testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up is Brian Martinson from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Mr. Martinson, you got a minute.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on this proposal. Drainage law and drainage financing is not easy. It is complex. And in acknowledgement of that, Minnesota has established a drainage work group that typically vets legislation and presents it to the legislature after agreements have been reached among stakeholders. This proposal has not been brought to the DWG, and it should. If not to reach an agreement, at least to vet and better understand the impacts of the proposal. Drainage financing has been addressed. Drainage financing was discussed at the DWG several times over the last year, and it was clear that there were no easy answers to how to address some of the problems that arose from this issue. MWAD are members of that work group and had never presented this approach to the DWG or counties prior to this bill introduction. The statute requires coordination between watershed districts and counties for good reason. Financing projects cannot and should not be done without considering the costs. We need to work together, not mandate obligations. I don't have
thank
a desire
you, thank
to-
Thank you, Mr. Martinson. We have to wrap your testimony there, and I want to get to at least one member question here.
Thank you.
Representative Heintzman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wish we had about an hour to walk through some of the impacts that this bill could potentially have if it became law. I understand the bill author is looking to specifically resolve a problem in a
a local area of the state. But I will just quickly mention that if we were to apply this and this were to become law, you would have unelected watershed district managers telling elected county commissioners, we're talking about folks with election certificates, that they would be required by state statute to issue bonds that affect property taxes. So that's a big, or at least the residents of that county, but that's a big, big question mark for my members. And if it does come up at a later date, we'd have, I think, a very lengthy debate. Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Representative Heinzman. We do have to adjourn at 2:30, so I'm going to give Representative Hansen the chance for some closing remarks here. The bill is being laid over, so there will be some opportunities to have discussion and continue to work on this. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I mentioned at the beginning, this bill is being laid over. The purpose for bringing this bill forward was to daylight it. I appreciate that it appears there's some agreement that was reached last Friday, but I think it's important. We have huge authorities and money that are spent here with throughout the system with watershed districts and with the counties. So it's important to daylight this. We'll continue the conversation, but it's being laid over.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 1820 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over, and with that, we are adjourned.